کشورش فرانسه را دوست دارد، اصالت ایرانی دارد و در این مسابقات به نام دو کشور ایران و فرانسه شرکت کرده است. با وجود شکست ارغوان رضایی در مرحله 1/16 نهایی مسابقات تنیس رولان گاروس که یکی از 4 مسابقه مهم بین المللی تنیس است، نه تنها این قهرمان ایرانی فرانسوی جای ویژه‌ای در قلب دوستداران تنیس فرانسه و ایران باز کرد، بلکه به واسطه درخششش در طول بازی‌ها از مرتبه 142 به جمع 100
and Yves Foot opened fire on the vehicle in which she was traveling. Nehebia Nassav Jassem, the mother of two children, a 7-year-old cousin, was killed by the old fascists, according to police captain Naleigh Mohammed and eyewitnesses. The U.S. military admitted that soldiers fired at a car after it entered a prohibited area and an observation post, but failed to stop despite what they say were repeated warnings. Jassem's brother, who was wounded in the U.S. attack on a vehicle, said he did not see or hear any warning as he sped his sister to the hospital. And Jassem was waiting for her there. The pregnant woman's brother told the Associated Press, "I was driving my car at full speed because I didn't see any sign or warning from the Americans. Not until they shot the 2 bullets that killed my sister and cousin, I stopped." He said that he hoped God takes revenge on the Americans and has brought them here. They have no regard for our lives. He said that doctors tried but failed to save the baby after his sister was taken to hospital. The shooting death occurred in the wake of an investigation into the murders of at least 24 unarmed civilians killed execution style in the Western War of Kabul. A number of U.S. Marines will apparently be charged in that incident. The White House has given the Chilean president an ultimatum, vote against Venezuela as an invasion or end. According to Progreso Weekly, based in Miami, the administration of U.S. President George W. Bush, with an arrogance bordering on intimidation, wants to impose its will on Chile's sovereignty and force that country to impede Venezuela's admission to the United Nations Security Council. That attempt came to light recently when the Chilean daily La Tercera published a report based on Chilean diplomatic sources entitled White House Ultimatum. In a translation of that report, Progreso Weekly says that during a visit by Chilean Foreign Minister Alejandro Foxley to the U.S. State Department on April the 21st, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice devoted an overwhelming proportion of her meeting with Foxley to only one issue, Venezuela's candidacy to the United Nations Security Council. According to La Tercera, the U.S. Secretary of State differentiated this issue from all other regional and multilateral decisions. Instead, its singularity is that it aims at the heart of U.S. interests. Foxley attempted to explain that Chile must consider the opinions of its neighbors, and that, in any case, Chile has not yet made a decision. But the U.S. Secretary of State was unequivocal. The United States will not understand a vote by Chile in favor of Venezuela at the Security Council. To provide some background to the UN battle that is shaping up, Professor Lincoln announced that the General Assembly of the United Nations will vote in October to elect the 5 new rotating members who will join the Security Council on January the 1st. The Security Council is composed of 15 member countries, 5 of them, the United States, Russia, China, France, and Britain, are permanent members, and another 10 are elected for 2 years of change alternately. Latin America has had its first seat, now occupied by Peru and Argentina. But Argentina must abandon its seat on December 29th. Venezuela wishes to accompany, or occupy rather, that seat, but is challenged by Guatemala, Washington's unofficial candidate. According to the Comité, the reaction in Chile was instantaneous and solidly nationalistic. The spokesman for the Chilean presidency, Ricardo Lagos Moreno, said that Chile is a dignified country. It doesn't allow itself to be pressured, and it's a country that conducts diplomacy. We are not into pressure. We are into building consensus. And you're tuned to Radio Havana, Cuba, broadcasting to North, Central, and South America on these very same international shortwave frequencies. Researchers say they are bracing for a sharp rise in the cost of public health services in South Africa within the next few years, due to HIV/AIDS. According to AllAfrica.com, experts warn that the large numbers of HIV-positive South Africans are expected to develop AIDS-related diseases as the country's high prevalence rates start manifesting themselves in illness and death. The Health, Economics, and HIV/AIDS Research Division of the University of Zulu Natal. Captain Atara,
now meeting you to ask Marie or the Shaman Rosso. Senica Mario Antic, plasirao se u četvrtokolo Roland Garrosa. U dvoboju trećeg kola pobjedio je Španjolca Alberta Nantanesa sa 6-1, 6-4. Karolina Šprem nije se uspjela plasirati u četvrtokolo Roland Garrosa. Bolja od mjesta 7-5, 6-3 bila je Amerikanka Venus Williams. Vremenska prognoza. Umjereno i pretežito oblačenje, nulte kiša pod Dolphin. Inayodhibiti kiwanda hicho imesema kuwa wamefanya mawasiliano na mateka hao na kuwa wako katika hali nzuri ya afya. Wanasayansi wamedhibitisha mkurupuko mpya wa ugonjwa wa homa ya ndege aina H5N1 nchini jana. Afisa mmoja mkuu wa afya Biko Isoko alisema kuwa sampuli kielelezo zilizochukuliwa katika kijiji cha Boko Maigao karibu na mpaka wake na Nigeria zimeonyesha kuwepo kwa virusi vya ugonjwa huo. Virusi hivyo H5N1 viligunduliwa kwa mara ya kwanza nchini Niger mnamo mwezi wa Februari na kupelekea kuuliwa kwa maelfu ya ndege na kuku waliokuwa wameathirika katika eneo la Maradi. Ugonjwa huo wa homa ya ndege tayari umegunduliwa katika mataifa 8 barani Afrika, ambapo watu 7 wamefariki, 6 kutoka Misri na 1 kutoka Jibuti. Vikosi vya ulinzi nchini Misri vinasema kuwa vimewapiga risasi na kuwaua wakaka watatu wanaoshiriki katika ulipuaji wa bomu uliowaua watu 20 katika eneo.
Dande kongot e bazikana keda kono qabulo u qara rahim buta yesu ada khani ada san atkar yesu buta ada wachinda kene kono qabulo u den rak toyal dare saniyasa yo qali dawlo u kunu bu kelda qodi el habu el ra wala hes aqab shalde qan ra sara ka akhira dawlo na zamale khashi babare dare sana ku atkar yesu qali dawlo u kunu da ban ra wala buta gere kon tum qati u kunu bu wazi u gomani kil evel de bachara kakhi dare kon ant ku atkar yesu u kunu bu kelda qadu mahkul kuri azagani
Ну, снимали посетителей. Сурсы, воросы, федерация, выгодки, полисуды. На территории республики Южная Осетия действуют российские законы. На территории республики
And is confident that they cannot be faked.
Now tennis.
The Russian man Mikhail Davidenko is tied to the 1/8 of the final of the French Open after demolishing Carlos Moya of Spain 6-1, 7-5, 6-3. One person to congratulate him was ex-president Boris Yeltsin, a keen fan of tennis and a spectator at Roland Garros. Earlier on Friday, the Russian girl Svetlana Kuznetsova made it to the 1/8 by beating Lina of China 6-3, 6-7, 7-4. To end the year, the headlines once again. Russia categorically opposes the use of force against Iran. It also welcomes the American decision to join negotiations with that Southwest Asia country and continues to insist that sanctions against the Iranians are no option before diplomacy is allowed to take its course. Vladimir Putin told this to executives of news agencies in the G8 after meeting with them in Moscow on Friday. Vladimir Putin also believes that partnership and cooperation between this country and Italy is a major factor of peace, stability, and economic prosperity in Europe. And Russia dispatches a team of pediatric surgeons to the earthquake area in central Java in Indonesia. That's the news. You are tuned to the Voice of Russia World Service. Hello, I'm Lubovtsevskaya with another edition of This is Russia. Today's program will tell you about Pskov, an old city in northwestern Russia, and about the Tuvachi handicap. To make a radio trip to Pskov, an old city in northwestern Russia, steeped in history.
The history of this city goes back centuries, and it's first mentioned in a chronicle of 903 as Pskov. Our ancestors, who knew where it was best to build their cities, started off by erecting a citadel on a scenic promontory overlooking the confluence of the Velikaya and Pskova rivers, around which the city has been expanding the past 1,000+ years. Straddling a strategic trade route connecting Russia with Western Europe, Pskov acquired early importance as a major trade and handicraft center. A 13th century German chronicle pictures Pskov as a big, as several towns taken together and bigger than anything we have in Germany. Germany. Over the centuries, Guam repeatedly stood in the way of enemy invasions, consistently being fortified by its citizens to become an impregnable fortress protecting Mindanao from the west. The city has since survived 120 wars and 20 sieges. In 1240, the Teutonic Knights captured Pskov. But after their defeat in 1242, on the ice of Lake Peipus by Alexander Nevsky, the 13th century saw the city at its height. In 1348, Pskov achieved full independence as a republic on the strength of its rapid economic growth and its closeness to the enemy. The city's advanced public and political makeup brushed off on a spiritual and material culture. And one-of-a-kind 14th to 16th century architectural masterpieces can still be seen gracing the city's historical center. Guam is unthinkable without its imposing cathedral of the Trinity, whose huge iceberg-shaped white stone structure can be seen from miles away. It is the tallest building you can find in the old city, and when centuries ago Pskov was a republic, the cathedral was the seat of the city assembly and also the place where the city authorities kept their most important documents. From here, the city irregulars headed for the battlefield, and it was here that the city buried its fallen defenders. The present 17th century building is the fourth on the site, the earliest wooden cathedral dating from the 12th century. It holds the remains of St. Prince Dovmont Timothy, a valiant warrior and a wise statesman who ruled the city for 33 years. In 1299, the prince, already advanced in years, beat back yet another Teutonic invasion and completely routed the retreating German knights. 2 months later, he died and was buried in the cathedral. The remains of St. Nicholas Stone. And this man deserves special mention. When Tsar Ivan the Terrible arrived at the still independent city he wanted to annex, and the citizens, scared out of their wits, went out, icons in hand, to greet the no-nonsense ruler, the god's true Nicholas, riding on a stick, came up from behind and, addressing the Tsar, said, "Come on, Ivan. Try some bread and salt. It tastes better than Christian blood." Exasperated, Ivan the Terrible sent his men after the troublemaker. But all of a sudden, Nicholas just vanished into thin air. Stunned by the man's disappearance, the Tsar spared the citizens' lives and proceeded into the cathedral. After attending a divine service there, he dropped by Nicholas's tiny cell. The god's fool offered him a piece of raw meat. "I'm a Christian and don't eat meat during Lent," the Tsar replied, trying to laugh off the whole thing. "You drink people's blood instead, don't you?" said Nicholas, looking the Tsar straight in the eye. The man's daring saved the city from plunder, and after Nicholas's death, the grateful citizens buried him right inside the cathedral, which was a great honor previously reserved only for archbishops and princes. Another historical and architectural highlight is the Pskov Petrovsky Monastery, a magnificent monument of medieval Russian architecture located about 70 kilometers west of the city. The monastery stands in a deep ravine whose hard limestone walls are dotted with small caves. Hermits started settling here centuries ago. And legend has it that once, back in the 14th century, hunters who were spending the night in an oak grove nearby heard wonderful singing coming from under their feet. They tried unsuccessfully to find the source of the divine singing, and the ravine has since been known as a sacred place. A few years after that incident, an old oak went down, revealing underneath a cave several old hermits lived in. The first church was built here in 1473, the year which marked the beginning of the Pskov Petrov Monastery. The monastery shot to national prominence with the advent of the energetic and highly educated Father Superior Cornelius. Legend has it that before ordering the construction here of a fortress and a monastery, Cornelius required permission from Ivan the Terrible. The ever suspicious monarch, constantly fearing plots to unseat him, the Tsar sent back a taunting answer saying the fortress should not be bigger than an oxen hide. Undaunted, Cornelius ordered a hide cut into narrow strips and tied together. The resultant hide was 810 meters long, exactly the length of the perimeter of the monastery's outer walls. As a result of this effort, Russia obtained an impregnable fortress and monastery which effectively protected this country's western frontier from the hostile Germanites on the other side of the border.
رادیو فردا. only in the Caucasus, but also in Turkey and Iraq.
And they were the best
in the olden days, too. According to legend, the two-horned helmet of Alexander the Great was made by Kubachi craftsmen. And the earliest of Kubachi marvels that has survived to this day is believed to be a saber that belonged to Russian prince Mstislav, who lived in the 15th century. Kubachi craftsmen were also famous for women's adornments, such as massive bracelets, finger rings, and buckles with large semi-precious stones, turquoise, and pearls. Motley glass was used to this effect too. The bright composition was carefully supplemented with gilt and black enamel. Local legends say the Kubachi handicrafts originated in ancient times, when the Greeks were digging for gold, silver, copper, and other metals in the Caucasus Mountains. As they did so, they made wonderful jewelry items of the metals right on the spot. And the old Greek masters taught the trade to the locals. Kubachi residents had a habit of decorating their homes with ornate items. As they visited foreign countries to sell their wares, the craftsmen always bought antiquities, Chinese, Persian, and Russian highly glazed pottery and chinaware, fancy boxes made of ivory, copper tableware. The tradition passed on from generation to generation cultivated in them an exquisite stillness.
The AU, which has 7,000 troops monitoring a widely ignored ceasefire in Darfur, has threatened to slap sanctions on the holdout party. But political maneuvers mean very little to the people here. Until more signs of deal, they say, there will be no peace in Darfur. Noel King for VOA News, El Paso, Darfur.
The top U.S. sports story has the Miami Heat eliminating the Detroit Pistons 95-78 and moving on to their first NBA Finals. Neil O'Neal had 28 points and rebounds to lead Miami. They'll play the winner between Phoenix and Dallas for the title. And that's our program. I'm David Chadwick. Have a safe and pleasant weekend.
I'm Tony Collins with VOA's Today in History. Henry White became the first American to walk in space on June 3rd, 1965. Astronaut White came out of his Gemini space vehicle 216 kilometers above the Earth. Attached to the spacecraft by a 7-meter lifeline, providing oxygen and communications, White used a special handheld propulsion device to maneuver in space. White found the experience so enjoyable that he extended his spacewalk to 20 minutes, although it had only been planned for 12. Flight director in Houston finally had to force White back into the spacecraft. The spacewalk in 1965 demonstrated that humans could work in the hostile environment outside their spacecraft.
Ready for it, Houston.
The flight director says get back in.
Okay. Less than 2 years after his historic spacewalk, astronaut Edward White died in a fire training for another space mission. On June 3rd, 1951, the three-masted super ship Flying Five left New York Harbor on a maiden voyage to San Francisco. Even though the Flying Five was a new ship with a new crew, it had a record of 89 days for the 25,000-kilometer trip. The usual time for a voyage around the stormy Cape Horn of Pacific South America was 150 to 200 days. The Flying Cloud was the newest of several so-called super ships built by Donald Kay Shipyards in Boston, Massachusetts. By the mid-1870s, only a few of the fleet ships, like the Flying Cloud and Britain's Cutty Sark, could compete against steam. I'm Tony Collins with VOA's Today in History.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.